Good day, Internet.
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 I'm going to give you a choice, all right?
Oh.
We can speculate on what the new tracks on Beyonce's new album dropping July 29th will be, or do that after Daily Tech News Show.
Yeah, maybe save it for the post show. It'll be something fun to look forward to.
Yeah.
Build up the tension.
Yeah.
And give the audience a chance to come up with their own ideas.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Got it. To really think about it.
Also, we're going to solve disinformation on this show. So,
anything
that you might say you might be skeptical of, but once we solve it, everybody will know that what we're saying is the truth.
Exactly. All right. Well, then I'll count
us in. The new tracks will just appear to us at
that
point,
right? It's my responsibility to the public to count us in.
Indeed.
here we go. In 3, 2... Daily Tech News Show is made possible by its listeners. Thanks to all of you, including Johnny Hernandez, High Tech Oki, and Logan Larson. Coming up on DTNS, inside the Amazon Style Store, eBay's move to live shopping streams, a lot of streaming ads happen when your TV is off, and we solve the disinformation problem. You're welcome. This is the Daily Tech News for Thursday, June 16th, 2022 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Redwood, I'm Sarah Lane.
From Austin, Texas, I'm Justin Robert Young.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
Yes, I can't wait for us to just finally solve that nagging problem. But hold your horses or your cars or scooters or whatever vehicle you use to get around. Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Samsung released a new Samsung Wallet app in the UK, the US, and parts of Europe, which will handle payment cards, also passwords, and integrate with the SmartThings to store digital home and car keys. Wallet takes place of the existing Pay and Pass apps. Wallet also integrates with the Samsung Blockchain Wallet app to let users check values on their dwindling crypto asset.
Oh, so sad. Microsoft announced Microsoft Defender for individuals as part of the Microsoft 365 subscription for Windows, of course, Mac OS, iOS, and Android. This provides a dashboard with the security status of connected devices and runs its own malware protection engine on Android and Mac OS. Microsoft plans to add identity theft protection and other consumer-focused features to Defender going forward.
The markup looked at the websites of Newsweek's top 100 hospitals in the U.S. and found that 33 of them included the Metapixel, which is used to track data for Facebook's advertising system. Pixels are small, one-by-one images that log the IP address of an individual loading the page. IP addresses are somewhat vague indicators of a person's location, but they can also send other referral data when they do load. And the markup found instances of the pixel packaging in medications, also descriptions of symptoms, doctors' names, search terms, and conditions selected from a drop-down menu. The markup wasn't able to determine how personally identifiable the information was or how Facebook might use it or already be using it.
Discord launched its AutoMod autonomous moderation tool available on all community servers. It scans for select words, phrases, and malicious links with automated responses like blocking messages and alerting admins.
Elon Musk's The Boring Company has received approval from the city of Las Vegas, Nevada to bring its underground transportation system called the Vegas Loop to city limits. The Vegas Loop was originally a 29-mile tunnel network connecting 51 stations. Now the network is said to expand, at least granted the ability to expand, to 34 miles and have a total of 55 stations, including ones that will serve the Harry Reid International Airport and the Allegiant Stadium. Tunneling could begin in 2023, according to Boring Company President Steve Davis.
You really will be able to never see the sky in Las Vegas from the minute you land.
That was always my gripe with Vegas. Too much sky, not enough indoors.
Oh, man, I had to actually step outside. I only want the fake sky that's in the mall in the Venetian. Come on.
Man, I lost $300 at the tables in the Hyperloop. What a bummer.
All right, let's talk about what's going on with shopping online.
Let's do it. So if you can believe it, it's really been a year since Andy Jassy took over from Jeff Bezos as CEO of Amazon. How time flies. The Wall Street Journal has an article looking at that first year and noting the moves by Amazon to cut back on the spending that accelerated during the pandemic lockdowns. Amazon is certainly not alone in a company that has had to scale back on that. One aspect of that is shutting down physical stores like Amazon's Four-Star and bookstores, but also opening new ones, such as Amazon Style, that's a clothing store. Now, Tom, we know you went to one yesterday. Not everybody is near enough to go to physically hang out at an Amazon Style store. So how'd it go?
Yeah. So the Americana in Glendale has one of the Amazon Style stores. They shut down the Four-Star store there and opened up Amazon Style. It's interesting. The idea, if you remember us talking about it before when they launched it, is there's one of everything on the rack. You find the thing you like, you scan the QR code, and then you say, send that item in my size and the color I want to either a dressing room that I'll go to and try it on, or to a pickup location. So I found a purple flannel shirt that I liked. And I decided, you know what? I'm not even going to try it on. I'm just going to send it to the pickup station. So I went over to the pickup station and picked it up. I had to wait like 5 to 10 minutes from the time that I scanned it. So I actually had a little seating area that I sat at and waited. Then I saw it come out and go on the rack, and I walked up and I was like, oh, that's my purple shirt. They're like, oh, great. Can we see your app? And so I opened the app. They scanned the app. They're like, okay, great. And then they go back. They looked around for it. I'm like, it's the only thing on the rack. Like,
yeah,
it's not going to be hard to find. Then they gave it to me and said, all right, you just got to go check out now. So then I had to carry it over to the checkout stand and buy it. And I bought it in the app that I had just used to scan it. And then I had to scan that app to prove that I paid for it before they handed it over to me. But, yeah, it's a nice purple shirt. Very, very comfy. I think for that use case that I used, way more complicated than it needed to be.
Well, yeah, because it seems like a more complicated version of the treasure truck, which some folks have interacted with. But that was an Amazon thing that would bring one item to various different locations in major cities. And because one of them was very close to my house, I bought a bunch of stuff off there because every once in a while there'd be an air fryer for cheap. But I would buy it right there on the app like you would any other product, and then I would just pick it up. So the fact that this is two stages as opposed to one is interesting because they've already had a successful one stage version of this.
Yeah. And in fact, I think that's what this is meant for, is I want to just try it on. I don't want to buy it yet. So I go in the app and say, put it in a dressing room. I'll be there soon. And then you show up, try it on and buy it. Right. Or I think you can also buy it and just pick it up and not have to check out. I did the normal thing you do when shopping, which is browse around, find something and then not try it on and hope it fits.
Yeah.
And it's not really meant for that.
Yeah. And what you described, Tom, is like there's one step too many for something like that, you know, to sort of sit there and wait for somebody to take something off the rack that you could have just taken to the register yourself. Seems a little counterintuitive, but what if you were shopping for 20 shirts? I don't know how often somebody's going to be doing that, but there'd probably a lot of reasons that you would. And then I think that would make a lot more sense of, okay, I'm trying on a bunch of things. Yeah, yeah. Color's not right. Fit's not right. Help me just kind of organize everything so I'm not schlepping, you know, all the things that I decide to finally buy, you know, to the register myself. So it does seem like it has a good use case, but not necessarily for everyday use.
I don't want to get anyone in trouble, but I did ask like, hey, how's it going since you opened? And one of the employees like, kind of slow. I'm not sure anyone knows we're here. It was, there were other people in there. It wasn't totally empty. It actually felt like a normal crowd, but it wasn't like a new store had just opened kind of crowd. There were ads all over the Americana for the store, but I'll be honest, I didn't realize they were for the store and I was going there. They just look like Amazon clothing ads. I'm like, oh yeah, Amazon sells clothes. Like, they didn't make me think, oh, there's an actual location I should go to in this mall.
Man, they had a location targeted mailing list.
Yeah, right.
Once you were in the store, did the store remind you of any other retail stores you've seen before, or yeah, did it feel really different?
It felt like a Zara, but with only one of each thing on the rack instead of, you know, five.
Okay. Yeah.
So it sounds like it's optimized for people who are trying on a bunch of stuff.
Exactly.
This is browsing and optimized for browsing stuff. For that, I would say traditionally, you know, women's clothes tend to be a little bit more Byzantine in their descriptions and listings and everything. So trying things on is more of a necessity than men's clothes, which is a little bit more forgiving. You need to know a few numbers and a few letters, and you're pretty much able to dress yourself, even if you get it a little wrong. I'd be interested to see how it goes. But as for there being nobody there, again, I made a joke, but holy smokes. Let the world know Amazon.
They are. It's just that people are like, yeah, Amazon. I know what Amazon is. Like, they don't. It doesn't even click that. That's what when you see that Amazon logo, that's what you think. Anyway, another trend that's dominating in China and other Asian markets is live stream shopping. Amazon has some of that. They haven't gained as much traction on it though. Twitter, YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, Pinterest. They all have their own efforts, but there's a new one.
Indeed, there is, Tom. eBay is getting into the game with eBay Live rolling out in beta this month. You might say, well, what is it? The first event will be a selection of rare trading cards from Bleecker Trading in New York. To note, these are actual cards. They're not NFTs. This is physical stuff. That starts at 3 p.m. Eastern on June 22nd. Highlights will include a 1995 Topps Finest Michael Jordan M1 Red Bordered Refractor PSA 9 Mint. And a 1998 Kobe Bryant Skybox, That's Jam PSA 10. If you know, you know. Shoppers can access the live event in the eBay app or website. Also interact with the sellers in the chat to ask some questions, you know, and make sure it's what you want. And then, of course, buy the things.
Yeah. Well, best of luck to eBay on conquering live shopping in the United States when it's huge in other parts of the world.
What do you think that is?
I don't know. I think people think QVC when they hear it and then don't try it. And there was not that history elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. So you think QVC salted the earth?
Yeah. Cold. And the people who like QVC go to QVC. So they don't go try the new thing.
I think it's because it is fairly pervasive in our culture. Like, there's a lot of sponsored stuff. There's a huge market for people demoing things and trying things out. And that's ultimately what you get from this kind of stuff, because we're making informed consumer decisions. So,
yeah, let us know what you think. If you've got a theory on, especially if you're someone who's in one of the markets like China or Korea, where this is huge, like, why do you think it's not catching on over here in North America? Feedback at Daily Tech.
Well, there's probably more than a few folks saying it has caught on. And I'm one of the people that, you know, is super excited about it.
Yeah, but by numbers, it's not even close to what it is.
Not even close. Yeah. I mean, my answer is always, well, only so many people, you know, kind of want to be collectors. But again, that's still a large number of people. Well, moving on to ad companies. We all love them. We often hear about them targeting you based on a huge amount of personal data that they can access based on your behavior and your history. We also occasionally joke about how this seems to end up with you seeing ads on pretty much every website or social network for a product that you just bought and therefore are no longer shopping for. For example, I bought the linen sheets already. Why do you keep showing me the ads for the linen sheets? Truly a thing I go through every day of my life, although sometimes I think about getting more. But the Wall Street Journal has another story about ineffective ads, ads that just don't work at all. So, Justin, what is the story here?
I'm so glad you asked, Sarah. A study by ad buying company Group M and ad measurement firm iSpot.tv found that about 17% of ads shown on television connected to a streaming device, Roku, Apple TV, Chromecast, etc., are playing while your screen is off. It happens most often while viewers are watching free streaming channels like Pluto TV and is estimated to result in a couple $1 billion worth of ads unseen by human eyes. Sometimes when you turn off the TV, the device gets the message through the HDMI and turns itself off, but not always. This pretty much doesn't happen if you use smart TV apps, since the app stops running when the TV turns off.
Yeah, it sounds like we're going to start seeing a lot of work to detect if your television is truly off, even if the screen is off and has stopped playing ads, because that is important information for advertisers. And you'll definitely see more attempts by apps to put up one of those, are you still watching Netflix X prompts after a certain amount of time has passed? without you taking any action in an app.
Yeah.
When I first heard this story, I was like, really? I mean, I turn off my TV, you know, I, you know, with voice commanded pretty much every night. Does this apply to me? And I don't really think it does with most of the apps that I use, but this is really good intel for anybody who cares about this sort of thing.
Yeah. If you're watching Netflix, this doesn't apply, right? Netflix doesn't have ads yet. Might someday. And if you have autoplay on in Netflix, it could apply, but you've probably been trained to remember like, oh crap, I forgot to close Netflix last time. And it like just kept playing. And now I have to go back and reset my play. Pluto TV though, there's no downside. If you're just watching that grid and you're watching that Golden Girls channel and then you turn off the TV, it just keeps going. And it doesn't affect your viewing history, but it is playing ads and those ads get counted, but you never see them. And apparently that's a problem that is 17% of ads shown on televisions large, and streaming ads are getting bigger and bigger, not smaller and smaller.
And advertisers everywhere are like, la, 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 don't hear it.
No,
no, don't want to know.
It has been a problem since the beginning of display ads. From the very first time that somebody sold a spot of their cave for which a local business could paint their logo on it, we have had the problem of trying to track exactly how many people are going to see this thing. Newspapers count circulation, despite the fact that there is no guarantee that they are going to see your ad on page 3 of the sports section. There have been problems with television ads, and you are only trying to guess based on a flawed Nielsen system exactly how many people are doing it. Same thing with magazines, same thing with radio, same thing with every other version of this. These kinds of ads are by definition scattershot. So the fact that we even have a quantifiable look at something that we now understand is total waste is actually a huge quantum leap forward for this method of advertising.
Yeah.
There is a reason why targeted ads that came through on Facebook and Google immediately overturned the industry. Adding that level of granular analytics to advertising was and remains today in the year of our Lord 2022 a game changer.
Yeah, I think the only difference is with a display ad, you had to survey people to find out if they saw the ad in the newspaper. With web delivered ads, internet delivered ads, you know they got delivered and you know where they got delivered. And so the fact that somebody might not have seen them is something you think you can solve with an HDMI sensor, you know, with a prompt. It's like, well, maybe we don't have to settle for the problems we had with the display ads. That's so well said, Justin. That's really the only difference here.
Yeah, we just know. And that's, you couldn't guarantee that when you bought an ad in a popular magazine that it was ever going to be seen by the amount of number. I mean, because you're buying an ad based on circulation. That's how these things used to work. Let's say magazines, for example. So you're saying, okay, the ad rate is set based on the fact that there are X number of subscribers. There's X number of people that we distribute this to. They sell it at X number of stands across the country. You're paying for that, despite the fact that almost certainly not everybody that it has a circulation for is going to read the magazine, let alone see your ad. But that's just how it is. You are building.
But that's not how it is. That's not how it's been on the web since the 90s.
Yes.
Right. And so people got used to the idea of like, yeah, but we don't want to go back to those days.
Well, I mean, even then, though, right? So let's look at web display ads, which ran on impressions. And as somebody who ran a blog,
but they got better and they got better and they got better. And now we're very sure that those ads we deliver at least get seen.
They get served. Whether or not they get seen is a different story.
As we are seeing in today's story. Yeah.
Especially as they are refreshing, right?
Like, yeah, yeah.
So this is the problem. But if you're in this game, you understand that you're buying in bulk. You understand that there's going to be a lot of waste here. And what you're hoping.
They don't want to go back to that, though. They don't want to go back to that.
They're now. There's no choice.
It would be kind of cool. It's like Pluto TV or any other network where ads are being served to somebody with their TV off. Like, configure out how the AI robot within the app can see and absorb the ad and then serve content to the human when the TV comes back on later.
Let's get Lemoyne on that. I bet he can make that happen.
Sure.
What do you, either human or AI listening to us, want to hear us talk about on the show? One way to let us know is in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. The specter of misinformation on the internet and disinformation, particularly for this story, has loomed large for almost a decade now, and governments and tech platforms keep making stabs at fighting it. In the latest move, the European Commission updated its code of practice on disinformation to now cover manipulative behaviors that include deepfake videos, bots, demonetizing accounts that spread misinformation. It requires platforms to give users tools to recognize and flag disinformation. 33 companies voluntarily signed on to these revised rules. They include Meta, Google, TikTok, and Twitter. Companies have 6 months to show they are in compliance with the new rules and can be fined up to 6% of global revenue for any violations. The code was first introduced in 2018, and for whatever reason, it's arguable it has not had much effect on the spread of disinformation.
Which leads us to a protocol story about the effectiveness of banning political ads, a narrow effort to prevent misinformation related specifically to elections. Twitter's policy, for instance, was to stop taking ads from political candidates, parties, government officials, or PACs, political action committees. Spotify, LinkedIn, TikTok, and Pinterest all banned political ads in a similar fashion. Nonprofits and smaller political organizations complained that the policies penalize them more than big corporations. Protocol uses the example of Exxon being able to run an ad about their view on climate change, while a climate advocacy PAC could not run a counter ad. So what effect have these ads actually had? Well, it's hard to say since none of the platforms have opened up their data on the policies or shared any of their own research on the matter.
However, former director of Facebook's public policy team and professor at UNC, Matt Perot, and his colleague Scott Bobwood Brennan did some research on publicly available data. They claim that Facebook's temporary ban on political ads that started immediately before and then ended immediately after the 2020 election had minimal impact on the spread of misinformation. It also limited the reach of smaller organizations and limited political fundraising efforts on Facebook. Political ads, as a result, have become more expansive and placed on programmatic ad systems that have less transparency. So we have less of an idea of who's buying the ads and where they're going. But this is one study, and it's far from what is needed to fully understand the impact. My big drum that I've been banging for years is you have to study the effects of these things to understand if you're even solving a problem or just taking a wild guess that something might be wrong and then doing a thing to make yourself feel better and having no effect, which I'll be honest, kind of looks like what has been happening.
Well, and especially when we enter into the realm of politics, considering how mainstream it has gotten and how much tech companies have taken it upon themselves as being the entire arbiters of all communication, some elements rightly, others wrongly, it means that you also mix in, did the wrong political message get out and how do we affect that? How culpable are we to affecting it? Tom, I want to ask you this question, you and Sarah this question. What is the line between disinformation and misinformation? Because I think a lot of people can be confused about this, including us, because we went back and forth with that definition even in the copy here.
Yeah. I mean, I guess very broadly, I would say disinformation is straight up not correct. It is just...
Give me an example.
If I said, I am a canine... I'm a dog.
You are. Say,
that would be disinformation. Okay.
Now I'm telling you.
That could almost be interpreted like I was born a canine and that's what I am. You'd say, well, that's not true. But if misinformation would be, I have some dogs upstairs and they are really good at math. You know, it may be like, is that true? In my dog's case, it isn't. You, Otis, but you're not good at math. So that's kind of how I identify the two separately.
So that would be a thing where somebody would be like, well, cognitively, your animals could not be that good at math compared to a human. And you'd be like, well, I've owned a lot of dogs and this one seems to know that I always give three treats. And when I hold back after the second, they're still looking at me. And so I consider that good at math for a dog. And so there's wiggle room.
Yeah.
Maybe the wiggle room is the differentiator here.
Sarah's definition fits what I've seen most people define this as, which is disinformation is like absolutely it's wrong. Misinformation is sort of misleading, and is a little bit less solid. But honestly, I don't think if you're doing a proper study, I don't know that you even need to define that. What you're looking for is the effects. What you're looking for is, did this policy lead to a certain effect on the election? Did people feel like they were well informed and made choices that they meant? And I think that's where this gets so wibbly wobbly, is sometimes people really just want to prove that the candidate they didn't like shouldn't have won.
Yes.
And that's not a good study. A good study says, was the electorate well informed about why they chose something? And you can design those studies. I know that sounds really wibbly wobbly the way I said it, but there's a long history of being able to design studies to be like, let's measure if a policy had an effect and what that effect was, without presupposing what the values are, should be, and what people should have done. Let's just see if it had an effect. You could learn something just from doing that.
Yes, I think. Even beyond that, we have to understand what is the best version of our society, right? What do we want to incentivize and what do we want to stop? And that is an element that I do think it's important to categorize misinformation and disinformation, because misinformation, I think, is very, very, very hard to get untangled from just a absent-minded or well-intentioned untruth, for which happens in society, and a malicious element of it. And it gets even more dicey when we enter the realm of politics, which is the art of misinformation. You are trying to shade the reality as much as you humanly can, to twist it so your candidate looks excellent and the opposition looks terrible. And that's what politics is and always has been. It's why whenever we get into these conversations, it's so unfortunate to me that politics tends to be the realm we want to fight on, because it is by far the most tricky.
Yeah. And I think that's why we're in such a garble about it and not making any progress on improving anything, whether it's political misinformation or disinformation or anything else, because people want to prove something different than what needs to be studied. What needs to be studied is, hey, they changed these policies. What effect did it have? Did it have any effect? Let's look at that. And then you all can decide what policies you want to do, if it had the effect you wanted, if you're trying to push a particular political agenda, or if you're just trying to have a neutral playing field. Those are different conversations. But study the effects. We can't do anything until we actually find out, like, did these policies change anything at all? And we have vanishingly few studies that actually do that.
Well, I'd like you all to behold something that I found very interesting this morning, and that is the Flopatron. If you're not familiar, it's a somewhat ridiculously large PC hardware orchestra that plays music using only electric motors, no software. Polish engineer Paweł Zarodniak has been building various iterations of the instrument since back in 2011, so you may have heard about it. The first Flopatron was just a pair of floppy drives that played the Imperial March theme from Star Wars, and quite well. However, the Flopatron 3.0 is capable of a full orchestra of PC peripherals. Specifically, and hold on to your butts here, 512 floppy disk drives, 16 hard drives, and 4 flatbed scanners. Zarodniak explained in a blog post that the floppy disk drive wall is arranged into columns, each handling a single note at a time. The number of drives involved varies the sound envelope, with the floppies handling the low tones, the scanner section providing the higher pitches, and the hard drives acting as the percussion section. And there is a video, and it will blow your mind, honestly. This is the coolest thing I've seen in quite some time.
Yeah, let's just listen to the beautiful music of the Flopatron. This is amazing.
And you might say, I don't know, it just sounds like MIDI music, right? Well, and it is.
Five, but maybe.
What has gone into creating this, hardware-wise, is a real feat.
Oh, I feel like it's better than MIDI.
Yeah, salute to Paweł, man. I tour with this. Tour with this. You deserve it.
Yeah, can you get that into a truck with a battery and just like take it around to festivals? That is an amazing feat. No, also,
he should be playing the Met. He should be playing Sydney Opera House.
Absolutely.
High art.
Also, Paweł has been working on this for half my tech news career. Like, we covered his first effort at Buzz Out Loud. No, wait a minute. I guess it was TNT if it was 2011, but still crazy.
Yeah, it's been some time. Yeah, I sent this to a friend who's into this sort of thing, and he was like, this is insane. Do you know him? I was like, no, I don't know him. I could try to find his information and connect the two of you. But
email the show, Pavel.
That's right.
We'd love to hear from you, and we love your music.
Yeah,
We sure do. We also love all the feedback that you give to us. If you have questions, comments, or anything to add on anything that we talk about on the show or anything we might talk about in a future show, we would love to get that feedback. Feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com is a good way to send us your feedback. Thanks to Justin Robert Young for being with us today. Justin, I know you're a busy man, so what's new?
I have a brand new panel political podcast called We're Not Wrong, featuring myself, Jen Briney of the Congressional Dish podcast, and Andrew Heaton of the Political Orphanage. This week, we discuss the January 6th hearings, the bipartisan gun control deal, and the case of Happy the Elephant, an elephant at the Bronx Zoo that had a case filed for it for habeas corpus so it would be freed from the zoo. All that discussion, it is the most fun thing that I've done in a while. I love talking with those guys, and I think if you enjoy the banter on this show and you're interested in politics, you're going to love it. We're Not Wrong, available everywhere that you get your podcasts.
Excellent. Also want to extend a special thanks to Mike Beatty, one of our top lifetime supporters for DTNS. Mike, we see you, and we raise you a glass of thanks. Thank you for all the years of support.
Yeah. Could be you next. Just stick around.
Yeah, exactly. There's a longer version of the show called Good Day Internet. Many of you already know about it, but if you don't, find out more at patreon.com/DTNS. We roll right into it for 30 minutes after DTNS rolls up. But we are live on this show, 4 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC, Monday through Friday. You can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We're back doing it all again with Rob Dunwood.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Great show. What should we call it? Help us decide. Showbot.tv/DTNS if you're watching or listening in the Twitch or the Discord. Thank you, everybody, for submitting those titles. You're the best. So, who's excited about Beyonce's new album?
Well, I didn't even know about it until you said something about it before the show came.
I was out on the loop.
I think I'm kind of up on the thing.
Well, the news just broke today, so it's
I follow
not like
the World Star hip hop Twitter account, you know, but I didn't know.
Yeah, it's going to feature dance and country songs.
Oh dear. Okay.
She's leaned country a few times. Mm-hmm. She's had some of the I guess you could take the girl out of Houston, but can't take the Houston out of the girl. I'm curious to know why she wanted to do a more traditional rollout than what she did with Lemonade, where it just showed up.
Yeah.
One.
Sure. Yeah. Well, that was the whole thing, is like, how did she keep it a secret? That's so crazy, because it ended up being, you know, such a cultural thing.
Gigantic thing. But I guess, you know, I don't know. She's always kind of been ahead of things. Although, you know, that element of like, I don't know, an album's coming out soon has sort of been the method lately, especially in the world of hip hop, where everyone just kind of guesses, like, is today the day? And you're watching to see whether or not somebody's asking, is it going to come out this day? And if a producer on the track liked the tweet or something like that, then it becomes its own little hype storm for artists like Kanye and Kendrick Lamar and Drake and stuff like that. Whereas this is like a fairly traditional rollout. It's going to come out now. I'm sure there'll be a tour associated with it and all of that.
Yeah, the British Vogue got the exclusive on it. That's how the news broke. And then it's
she didn't announce it.
It wasn't a sources say. It was like she gave British Vogue the exclusive.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
Instantly a wall of sound hits me, soaring vocals and fierce beats combine. That's literally what they wrote.
Oh, so they listened to the album.
Mm-hmm.
This was a like not a review, but a,
advanced preview. Was my part impression.
A feature story about her?
It's a cover feature. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha.
British Vogue cover feature.
This is a re-debut of Beyonce, emerging from our post-lockdown world, glorious and resplendent. Indeed, it is Beyonce.
Yeah, she's wearing a lot of gold, sitting on a throne, because she's Queen Bey.
Sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, a lot of sequins, Swarovskis, you know, all that.
Tom, you got any feature guesses? Who's going to be with Bey?
Good question. Apparently, Variety says Ryan Tedder co-wrote some of the tracks, but that doesn't really tell us much of anything.
Well, she's famous for doing her little colonies. She brings together a bunch of people and doesn't allow them to leave until she has a hit album.
Right. I don't have a sense of it yet.
Well, let me ask you this then. If you were to put money on one K-pop artist that would be on the new album, what K-pop artist would it be? Because that would be something that I could see.
Jesse,
the K-pop artist.
Jesse is the name of the artist. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. And that's an artist, not a group.
it's an artist. Yeah. She's a solo artist. She's indie. She's on Psy's label. And she has a song called P.I.C. I see you looking at my P.I.C.
What is P.I.C.?
Pick. Like you're looking at my Instagram.
Oh. I was like, what is this going to mean? Yeah. Just looking at my pick. You're looking at my pick.
I guess in a world of WAP, you cannot account for anything.
Right. I'm like, oh no. what is Jesse doing? She says, I just saw that you viewed my pick.
Okay, yeah. Gotcha. Okay.
It's called song's called Zoom, actually. Because the refrain is zoom in, zoom out, zoom in.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like we're all familiar.
Yeah.
Depending on what picks you like to look at.
It would be very Beyonce to go K-pop.
That's a good point.
Yeah, for sure. It seems like she's going country this time, according to the Variety article. So not yet.
Well, also what British Vogue describes as country.
No, Variety. Variety's calling it country. Oh,
Variety said it had country trends.
Yeah. Vogue did not.
If it was like a K-pop collab and everyone's doing country?
But she had,
and then
she
we all just go. Song.
Yeah, she had a country song on Lemonade that
she
also
did.
Had.
Although people said that, and when I heard it, I was like, I wouldn't really call this country. Maybe a little more country than R&B.
She played the CMT Awards, so like, you know, I think she thought of it as country.
Sure, but I mean, that's just like a good get for the award show.
It is.
Is having Beyonce there.
Yeah, or Blackpink. Blackpink's comeback album is due shortly. What if it's in conjunction with Beyonce?
Gosh, we have all sorts of theories, don't we?
Yeah, I don't get the sense that Beyonce is doing anything with K-pop this time, though.
No, this is just something that would be fun.
Yeah. you might have heard about it.
And if we're right, we're going to think we're really smart.
Because if she were, it would be with either Jungkook or J-Hope. J-Hope because he's the best dancer in BTS, and Jungkook because he has the best voice.
Well, or the biggest woman in K-pop would almost make more sense.
The biggest star solo woman artist is IU. But she's very much more singer-songwriter indie. Not saying that would preclude it, but it does. It's not. She's not as.
It seems like less of a.
That's why I picked Jesse, because Jesse's music is closer to Beyonce's.
Mm. Weirdly, Beyonce has been able to kind of keep that element of like not indie, obviously, because she's the biggest pop star in the world, but because she's so fiercely independent about what her sound is going to be. She's very much in control of it. Famously, there is almost more of a, like, she's not a singer songwriter. She's like a label. She's like her own machine.
Yeah.
Which feels weirdly empowering in a way that, like, no man, you're going to pay me to record and write the things I want. She's like, no, I want to do the deal directly with Walmart. and yeah. they are going to sell exactly what I'm telling them to sell.
No, totally. Yeah. I don't know. Big thing. She hasn't had one in like 4 years, right?
Well, I mean, you assume she probably would have had one between the last 2 years if everything hadn't gone totally crazy, because there's no way that Beyonce's releasing an album when she can't tour.
Yeah.
Like, right. She's releasing an album, then she's going to do a year and a half global tour.
Homecoming was 2019. Lemonade was 2016. Yeah.
Gosh, really?
So I guess it's 3 years. 3 years. And then wait, Homecoming.
Didn't you do the one with Jay-Z?
That was 2018.
That was 2018. Yeah. That was the one with Ape S.
Surfboard.
Well, that was Lemonade.
That
was right?
Lemonade, no, that was right. Way.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Oh no, that was older, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that pre Lemonade? You're right. It was.
It was. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Time. Just
yeah.
Moved,
it was. It?
Cigars on Ice. Which I mean, as a cigar fan, I don't know. I don't know, Bia. I don't know, Bay.
don't doubt it.
I don't need the Cigars on Ice. You don't need them.
We intentionally did not talk about Elon Musk talking to Twitter. And if you're like, gee, why didn't you? Cause there wasn't anything to say. He didn't say anything surprising. He said all the things he's already said except he said them to the people at Twitter. So,
and also there's rumors going again, this is why DTNS is an important journalistic institution, because it has rules about when you talk about things and when you don't talk about things. And yes, there are rumors that Elon Musk is going to reiterate his commitment to buying Twitter. He has not.
But he did. Yeah.
He's committed to buying Twitter. And even then, it probably would not be the big news that you would talk about until he, I don't know, officially buys Twitter.
That would be when I would love to talk about it. Yeah.
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 We try to talk about
things that actually happen.
You want to know what, Tom, I would love for you to do on your newsletter?
Yeah.
It's to award the, like, hype cycle a news story of the week or month or whenever you notice that there's a new one that is like entered into the pantheon.
Sure.
Because you know, for a while, forever, it was Apple, right? It was every little Apple thing, and it was maybe we're hearing a rumor, blah 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 blah. You have since, and I think in general the media has honed in on a few people that actually know what they're talking about, and you kind of go from there. But now it's Elon. It's unquestionably Elon that every little stupid thing that he does has clicks. So I would love for you, because you don't cover them, but you know them because you're not putting them in the rundown. I would love for you to highlight it.
Yeah. Like, what is that thing that tops tech meme every day that we're like, nope, that's not what we're talking about. Cause it's not.
Why we didn't cover.
Yeah.
Why we didn't cover.
That's a cool idea. Yeah, I like that idea. Thank you for that. I might do something with that.
Sometimes it is the thing that you cover, but not just because that's, you know, what a lot of people are talking about.
I mean, those things are often gigantic news creating devices. Elon Musk is a huge story. The question is,
sure, yeah, people are like, oh, what did he say this time?
Exactly.
And it turns out in this case, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, nobody was like, wow, the town hall was super crazy and, you know, he's going to burn that thing to the ground. It was just, I don't know, some word salad before
Every
anything
other
actually
CEO's
happened.
Town hall.
Well, no, he said, I'm for free speech doesn't mean free reach, which he has said before. He has said, wow, the economy's really bad. We might have to consider layoffs, which makes perfect sense. Every freaking company on the planet is saying that. He said a couple other things where I'm like, yeah, he's said that before. He just said it in front of everyone else. Like, I didn't see
it's
him
talking
saying,
points.
I didn't see him saying anything ridiculous, but I also didn't see him say anything new. So yeah, they're talking points, exactly.
Yeah, if anything, to me, the biggest thing that I took from it is that this sounds like a guy who's going to own the company. So all of the takes of like, oh, he's secretly backing out and he's looking for a way out and blah, 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 blah. I think that there's some high-level brinksmanship that is happening between Elon and Twitter.
Oh, certainly. He would like to change the deal to make it cheaper. Who would?
He would like a discount. I think he would like a discount. But also, I think, you know, you watch enough Succession, you understand that this is when things like that happen, is that you get very close. Everybody comes closer and closer and closer to showing your cards. And then you try to maneuver for whatever you can maneuver for. And you go from there. But I would say if we were doing a more speculative show and not DTNS, that all those quotes were like, okay, he sounds like somebody that is going to own this company. I don't think he's somebody that's just out there playing around, and he didn't lecture people or make a big political grandstanding point. He sounded like a CEO.
Yeah, exactly. He's the guy who asked to see the manager to see if he could get an extra discount. That's what's going on.
Yes, with the board. Like, yeah. That's what all this bot stuff is.
He's like, I know it's already 20% off, but could we make it 25%? Because I might walk out of here. I don't know.
Well, the problem is that the board has at every moment shown that they have nothing in the bank. And so it's like he came in and made an offer and they're like, absolutely not. Poison pill. We're doing all this stuff. And then they were like, oh, we're going to face a shareholder revolt. Okay, we'll take your offer. And then, okay, well, if you back down and didn't even fight me on that, then
what else could I get?
Then what, I mean, this bot thing is a huge deal because he's basically daring them to say, prove you're not bot infested, because if you're bot infested, then, and I walk away because you are bot infested, then that means if you are going forward, you're not going to get anywhere near the deal that I will give you, because people will know that the core way that you make money, which again comes back to how many people are on the thing, how many people are seeing the thing. If the market believes that those are overwhelmingly bots, or more than you are saying are bots, then that means that your value immediately goes down. And so they're really between a rock and a hard place, and they kind of have to show Elon what he wants to show. And they kind of got to let him pay what he wants to pay for it, because they're kind of screwed.
But again, yeah, I mean, not going to talk.
Listen, you hang out on Twitter enough, there's a bot problem.
But wasn't,
I mean, any company who says otherwise, you're not.
No. So Jeremy 946589444447 says otherwise.
He disagrees with me, of course, Jeremy.
Wasn't there an agreement that
he has a picture of a woman on a boat as his avatar, so he must be him.
Didn't they negotiate at a price
no? He can't be a bot. Yeah. He's a man.
But like, it was like, you can't back out of that agreed price without getting hit by, like, was it $1 billion penalty?
If there are certain terms in the agreement that are violated, like misrepresentations, we didn't explain that the bot problem was as bad as it was, and our user numbers were a lie. I bought based on these user numbers. Your user numbers are a lie. That's the rationale of how that goes.
Everybody will come to an agreement by the end of it.
Yeah,
that will say, this is the price, and this is blah 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 blah. But yeah, they have to posture. They have to go through it, and they got to see how serious it is. And I think that's part of the reason why there was a lot of information out there that was saying, oh, he's not serious. He's not serious. He's not serious. And I think he is. I think he's going to buy Twitter.
Yeah, it sounds like he is. He was talking about, like, I love working on the product. That's what I do at Tesla. That's what I'm going to do here. Also, he's the kind of guy who can be 100% serious about something until the day he's not. And then be like, yeah, it doesn't make sense anymore. I'm out of here, you know?
Yeah, I think
I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen, but if that were to happen, I wouldn't be like, oh, what a hypocrite. Like, no, that's just.
So would you say Elon going through with it right now is at a 60 to 70% chance? Or
now we're talking. Now we're sports talk radio. Now,
or is it just a 50-50 coin flip, like depending on which way
big,
it is?
Big deal, little deal, or no deal? Elon. Yeah. Elon's thing.
Look, with the free agent marketplace the way it is right now, Roger, he's going to have to sign a deal at some point.
No, Tom.
Roger, to answer your question.
You got it all wrong.
I'm really curious because...
Take that from a Giants fan, of course.
You know, the thing with, at least with the way Elon presents himself, he does kind of come off as capricious, like, you know, whatever, however I feel that day is you know.
Well, there's a lot of trolling going on. Yeah. Let's say it like it is. Yeah. There's a lot of.
Yeah, and as we all know, everything people write on Twitter is perfectly representative of their character, and no one ever misrepresents themselves for a...
I've never once been sarcastic on Twitter. Nope. Never once. Anybody who accuses me of that is just doesn't know me well enough.
It is important to remember with Elon Musk that for as much, and to answer your question, Roger, I would put the odds anywhere between 69 and 420% that he buys Twitter. But I for all the memes, for all of the S posting, he is the guy who built an American car company when that was a doomed path for decades, and he built a rocket company to, and has actively challenged entrenched players like Boeing and Lockheed and Northrop Grumman and stuff like that. These were impossible markets to enter, and he has successfully done both of them. A season.
When you put it that way, it really makes Twitter sound important.
Well, I mean, it's just like for everyone's like, I don't know, can he make Twitter more profitable? I think that there's a bunch of CEOs that I could name that could make Twitter more profitable than it is now, because I think it's been a fairly poorly run company for a very long time. For Elon, he's done a lot harder. He's solved for harder problems, at least in his business track record.
But we're not going to talk about it.
We're not, though.
Instead, we'll talk about the second story on Tech Meme, the EU toughening its well, we already talked about that.
No. How about this, Sarah? Dubs coming down with the title tonight?
Game six, y'all. I want them to win at home, but yes, let's clinch this. That's how I feel about it. But
it's better to win on the road than not win at all.
First MVP.
It's true. Like, once you win, it's like, who cares where you are? Sorry, MVP?
Steph's first MVP. He's never been the MVP before.
I mean, he absolutely should, but let's see what Andrew Wiggins does.
Now it really is.
Because that guy's on fire.
I can't. I love Steph too much to let... I mean, as much as Maple Jordan has put his name on this series, Steph's got to get it. Unless he's awful again. And by the way, that's why I think that they're going to win. Is the Celtics wasted. When Steph Curry can't hit a three and you still lose, that is some bum behavior.
Yeah. I'm a little stressed about it. Not going to lie. Because once we get down to... this is like the end of the NBA finals, even if I don't care about either team. Although I've mostly cared about at least one team because the Warriors have been... decade, right? But even so, it's like, it's that slow march to like, now what do I do? All right, we got baseball.
You go to eBay Live and you bid on that Kobe Bryant PSA 10.
Yeah, sure. Be right there. No, I just, it's, I want it to last forever. But, you know, anyway,
I will say nothing that does. The basketball playoffs are slightly more enjoyable than when your team's in the hockey playoffs. The hockey playoffs, at a certain point, when you're watching four rounds of it, is just a like just doing heroin and speed every three nights and having your chest.
What are those? Those are the speed balls, I believe. Tom would know a lot about that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, because his Blues won the championship not too many years ago.
Almost 3 years ago.
Yeah.
This weekend.
Hard to believe you remember that, Justin, because Tom never said anything about that.
Exactly.
Never once mentioned it.
Will we get taken off Twitch if I play Gloria?
I think.
Yes. You might get a little I think so. Yeah.
I don't know.
I'll give it a try.
Of course he has
the Stanley Cup.
He's got a blue Stanley Cup
that I have.
Yep. Weird. It's the only time you've ever mentioned this.
Is it?
All these years later.
I'm surprised I hadn't mentioned it before.
Yeah.
I'll remember to bring it up more often.
Yeah. It'd just be good to know like what teams you like.
Yeah.
Just, you know, like I'm on a friendship level.
I think I'm supporting the Lightning to three-peat in the Stanley Cup because I like the idea that only teams with Patrick Maroon can win the Stanley Cup.
No, because if they three-peat, then they're going to be better than my Penguins, who have twice repeated, and I don't like that.
I see.
So go Avs, go. Them.
Yeah.
Go Avs, go.
Gotcha. Well, you and Ebbett can have fun cheering on the Avs.
Cheering on the Avs.
What did you think of that MLS deal? We talked about it a couple of days ago, Justin. But Apple getting all the MLS games.
They've been rumored to be sniffing around for a while. It actually reminds me a lot of sports free agency, where, you know, when a team is kind of new or has a bad reputation, you have to overpay for players that might not be worth it. But if you're getting the right one, then you can start to build a larger stable because you're demonstrating that you've turned over a new leaf and your team's good. That's what it reminded me of, is they were overpaying for a fourth tier property that is growing, is successful in the right demos that you want. It is young people that largely like MLS, but it puts them in the realm. Now a lot of people are going, more people will have their eyes on that, the viability of their streaming platform, how much they put into it. That will all be closely watched, and I think it gets them closer to bigger moves where it's like, okay, not this deal, but down the road for basketball, down the road for football, down the road for hockey. That's what they want. Mm-hmm. And demonstrating it with MLS with a massive deal, big deal, is it shows everything that Apple wants to do. We got a ton of money and we want to get in this game.
Because I know Chaos ASL and others are thinking fourth tier. You mean football, baseball, basketball, then soccer and hockey, right? When you say fourth tier.
Yeah, I would probably put hockey above MLS.
They're pretty close these days, but yeah, maybe they're still.
Yeah, there. But there's a legacy appreciation in some media that puts hockey above ALS. They've got brands that when they're successful matter more. And again, it's no slight toward MLS. Every MLS game that I've gone to has been a blast. I think that nobody in sports can launch franchises like MLS. They always do it the right way. They start it 2 years ahead of time. They give a bunch of attention and love to super fans, so they know chance. You walk in, it's a great product because of that fixed clock. You know exactly when you're coming in. You know exactly when you're going out. They've understood their demo is people in their 20s and 30s that want to go out, get drunk, watch a game, and then hang out with people who also like soccer. They have done a fantastic job over the last 10 years of building their league. It's just that stuff doesn't happen overnight, no matter how much you like soccer.
Yeah. I mean, back in the day, soccer in the U.S. wasn't even fourth. me cheering for indoor soccer because there was a team and me being alone and doing that.
Hockey is a sport that has been so criminally mismanaged. Like they have been so insanely mismanaged because most hockey owners are effectively money laundering crooks. They are so dumb and so greedy that they cannot put the health of their league ahead of them making 5 cents more than they would otherwise. That they have relegated themselves lower than they should be. But we'll see. Baseball's its own world too, because they've got just so many games at a time when there's not any other sports.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody's kept the summer clear for them, except the USFL now.
What? A run, don't walk for those tickets.
I really enjoy watching the CFL because it's easier. I don't know why. It's just fun to watch. It's Fridays and Saturdays, not Sundays. It's I don't know why. I've just really been taken by the CFL, and it's a good product. They're great games, great teams.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe it's just because it doesn't have the drama of the NFL around it.
Well, the NFL is just, it's the monoculture. Mm-hmm. Like the NFL is just, it's got the biggest stars. It's got the biggest drama. It's got the biggest attendance. It's got the biggest ratings. It is just king sport in a way that few things have been in my lifetime. It is inescapable.
Like oxygen.
Effectively. I mean,
if you escape it,
you're going to have a problem.
You can't escape it. You just jump into a large body of water.
I mean, and talk about
go up.
You know, the NFL is so good that they have owners that may or may not be stealing from the league, and the train just keeps on rolling.
Yeah. Wait, what was that? I don't follow any sports news.
The Washington Commanders, formerly the Washington Football Team, formerly the Redskins, have a terrible owner, a legendarily terrible owner, who, among other things, has been rung up on sexual harassment charges and is just an outright bad steward of his legendary football franchise. Among the things that have now possibly crossed the line to him getting his team taken away is that he cooked his books and was not paying the money that he is supposed to by way of the collective bargaining agreement into the league. So that is a large question. And it's like, look, protecting him from a sexual harassment claim, it's a boys' club. Nobody needs to like it, but you do need to understand that these are very rich men's playthings and they will do as they will with it. This is effectively a country club. But when you talk about stealing from the other owners, that's the kind of thing that the other owners might say, well, that's a red line. I think we can all agree we should be on the other side of, and maybe we take Danny's team from him and then get the opportunity to make, I mean, I think what the Denver Broncos just sold for $3 or $4 billion. The Commanders would probably sell for north of that.
Yeah, that's just, you know, double the amount of ads that go wasted by TVs being off every year.
Yep. So the owners could say, hey, Danny, why don't you take this $4 billion golden parachute and you will head on out the door and we'll have, I don't know, somebody else.
The Verge has a headline right now. Activision Blizzard investigated Activision Blizzard and found Activision Blizzard didn't do anything wrong.
Well, that's cool.
Evergreen headline. Not slamming Activision Blizzard any more than they deserve to be slammed. But that's what HR is there for, the company, not for you.
It's the Activision Blizzard investigated itself and found no misconduct is the neutral version of that headline, but it is very passive aggressively riding the line to be like, well, but we're just saying their name again.
Yeah, I don't know. There's, if I could get off on a pedantic journalism rant,
like, I know I shouldn't throw journalism red meat at you right before we should wrap up.
Look, The Verge is The Verge. It's always had a voice. It's always been something that you are. It's from a blog age where you want your headlines to scream.
They're pretty good. They're not 100%. They're pretty good about, you know, providing factual bases for everything. That's a headline, though. That's different.
Sometimes you just, I don't know. Why? Tom, I'm just old-fashioned. I yearn for a day when I could read a news article and then an opinion article.
Yeah.
Not everything.
Listen. And we should realize that headlines are different than the body. The body is written by the journalist. The headline's often written by somebody else. In this case, our headlines are written by you, the audience, at showbot.tv/DTNS. Our top vote getter right now is from Zoe Brings Bacon. Ads are served, but are they seen? It sounds so philosophical when you put it that way.
Yeah. I like that one.
Chaos ASL asks, is that my purple shirt? No, it's mine. I bought it. Not yours. We also have The Art of Misinformation. Tom's been drumming his big drum for years. Certainly something I said. What else we got here? Are you still watching? I am a canine. Good at math. For a dog.
I was like, what's something that's untrue? I'm not a canine.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was a good example. Because you're provably not a canine. Yeah.
That'll work in a pinch. Yeah. I really am. I'm human.
Roger, everyone. What do we go with?
We went with disinformation solved.
Question mark? The answer is no.
From Chaos ASL.
For GDI, top vote getters. Oh, we got a bunch here. Building up the tension from Zoe Brings Bacon. Big deal, little deal, or no deal from Zoe Brings Bacon. We're not going to talk about it from Chaos ASL. And Sports Ball Speedballs from Batfleck 2001.
Yes. I just imagine Tom just like railing on speedballs, watching hockey, you know, in his living room comfortably in PJs, you know, yeah. nothing those, insane.
Those parts of my life have never overlapped.
Sadly. Yeah, yeah. Right. Well, you know, you're not dead yet.
We got looking at my PIC.
I like that one. I voted for that one.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
The Musk of Elon. Yeah. Of course, C-Spawn. Good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Musky rumors. Yeah. Let's go with the Jesse inspired one. Looking at my PIC from Chaos ASL.
Yes. What does it mean? It means pick. Oh,
I see.
Pick. Got it. I see.
Looking at my PIC. All right. Thank you to everyone who supports us at patreon.com/DTNS. There have been no new ones of you nor raises for 2 years, 2 years, 2 days. I'm sure everything is going to be just fine as soon as the Fed adjusts the interest rate.
By the way, in the PX3 episode tomorrow, we go back to 1994, the last time that this happened, also 2 years into a Democratic president's term, first term.
Oh, good point.
But it came after, or it was the sixth raise of the year by the Fed and Alan Greenspan. This is only the second. Mm-hmm. So take that for what you will, that this was... Greenspan tried to tap the brakes a bunch and then hit it hard. We have tapped the brakes once and then hit it really hard, and we will see whether or not it goes for them.
Thanks to DJ Fission for the 500 bits and the follow. Yeah. Norm Fizikas for the 29th month. Finally, I'm re-upped.
Whoop, whoop.
Got bits from Psycho Motor, Zoe Brings Bacon, Loki Robert, and PC Milesy, and Joel Freak resubscribed with Prime for the 24th month. That's going to do it for us. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out. For Sports Talk Radio, DTNS, I'm Tom Merritt. Have a good day.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day.